again.
You're listening to Industrial Evolution. I'm your host, Chad Perry, CTO and software engineer. You can find more episodes and contact information on our website, industrial.fm. Enjoy the show, and if you need help with custom software, data integrations, or strategy, be sure to reach out. That's industrial.fm. Today, we're speaking with two individuals from Coupa, a technology company that specializes in indoor real-time location tracking with centimeter-level accuracy. Coupa is one of those companies that sits quietly behind the scenes, multiplying their impact through downstream partners, integrators, and solution providers. So although you may never have heard of them in an industrial setting, or really anywhere else for that matter, you may very well already rely on their technology for material workflows, work in progress, safety, and countless other applications. Coupa's technology is a game changer for its ability to combine the benefits of accuracy and speed while taking advantage of the inexpensive, scalable nature of low-power Bluetooth. To better understand how indoor tracking is driving the industrial world forward, we're here today with two of Coupa's co-founders, Tom Ruth, Vice President of Coupa Americas, and Fabio Belloni, fellow nerd and chief customer officer. And in case you're wondering, that's Coupa, Q-U-U-P-P-A. So Tom, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Chad. Kudos for getting the pronunciation correct. That's usually the first test. But yes, thank you for having us, and we're excited to be here. My background has been involved in disruptive technology for the last 30 years. A quick correction. I'm not one of the founders. Fabio Belloni is certainly one of the founders. I came on board here a little over 3 years ago, and been happy to take charge of our business here in the Americas.
Fabio, you as well. Thanks for joining us. Always nice to have another engineer on the show.
Thank you, Chad, for having me here. It's a pleasure. Always love to be in discussion with other engineers and to have the opportunity to dig into some difficult question and to provide the facts behind the magic.
So you guys have a really interesting story, having been called both the youngest and the oldest indoor location company, which I think is really important to understand how your innovation fits into the fourth industrial revolution. If you can, take me back to the beginning. It's the early 2000s. You and your co-founders are researchers at Nokia Technology. You're working on this difficult problem. How did you get to where you are today with Coupa as its own company?
So myself and the other founders of Coupa, we pretty much all have PhD in different discipline of radio technology. Myself in statistical signal processing. And I was working in the university on my PhD when one day I was approached by my professor saying that Nokia has a problem and maybe we might have the solution. So that's how I was onboarded into Nokia. I was later on hired, and my initial job was to be an algorithm developer, to be able to compute by looking at data the direction of arrival of radio signals. That's how everything started. So we were the team inside Nokia Research Center that were looking at local connectivity and indoor location. So our task was to use any means of sensor, radio technology, video, in order to position a mobile phone beyond what GPS was already doing. This was the early 2000s. This was the time where GPS just approached the mobile devices and they were the first integrated GPS receivers. So we took upon the challenge, and since our background was in radio engineering, well, that's what we looked into. And we were fortunate, if you like, that our neighboring team was the one working on WeBri. That was the technology that later on got known in the standardization of Bluetooth as Bluetooth Low Energy. So we were fortunate to work very closely with some of the inventor of that technology, and we took upon the challenge of, okay, that team uses this technology for communication, can we use it for positioning? And that's how everything kind of started. Then fast forwarding, We started with the very nerdy prototype, cable hanging everywhere, and then little by little incorporated the old cabling and hardware into a device that looked like a prototype. We went public in 2008, successfully tracking people in an exhibition hall. It was a Nokia World event in Barcelona. And then in 2010, that's actually when the technology was on a rather mature prototype level. And we decided to actually approach the standardization body, the BTCIG, and to try to get that technology standardized. And that technology is what in 2019 was released as part of the Bluetooth 5.1 core specification, which nowadays people know as Bluetooth direction finding. So Coupa is a company that spun out of Nokia in 2012. Nokia was looking into other direction, as you probably all know. During that time, the mobile phone business was not in the core, and we were more on the infrastructure side, so a bit, you know, aside the mainstream. And but we believed strongly in what we worked upon for many years. And the role of Coupa has been to take in that early time prototype and to make it really become a scalable product. And that's what our team has been endeavoring and doing, I would say rather successfully, for the last 8 years. So we have been profitable from pretty much the very beginning, and we've grown organically with our own revenue for 8 years. And only this summer, we took the first round of investment where we closed the 20 million round to accelerate some of our strategic activities. So we currently have more than 2,000 deployments in 55 countries. We have more than 500 customers and a bit more than 200 partners, which means company that we do repetitive business with. And since we are a B2B companies, we work with system integrators, solution providers, service providers. We are like the engine in a car. They need an engine. That's what we give to them. They build the car and customize it for the end customer, depending on the vertical market they operate.
Tom, you're nodding your head. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I guess I like to, as we sometimes callously say, we give the dot on the map, but that's we like to think that that's hard enough. It's our partners who take our technology and solve relevant business problems for verticals, whether it's in manufacturing or whether it's in sports like hockey. And we always like to mention hockey and sports, even though that's not industrial. But if you, at its essence, if you can track a puck that's flying at 100 miles an hour, then you can track just about anything.
It's easy for us to take location for granted now, right? We have a smartphone, pull it out of our pocket. It feels inaccurate and it's frustrating, but it's a matter of seconds before it pops back into the right place. And so that's nothing short of a miracle, right? And so that's a combination of a lot of different technologies that have matured over time. So I want to understand, back in the early 2000s, what was the context of the business problem were you exploring? Was it the same thing? Did you see this future of indoor tracking as opposed to broader GPS tracking that can just track you outside?
That's a very great question. And actually, the vision that we had back in the early 2000s is still something that accompanies us still today. So we have done some market analysis during the early 2000s. One of the very first findings was that people spend more than 80% of their time indoor. They, you know, at work, visiting shopping center, visiting hotels, restaurant, what have you. And if you think about the value that already GPS can bring to people outdoor and to industry outdoor, that's just a fraction of what every one of us individually could gather if they would have a reliable and accurate technology to accompany them throughout every day. There is a lot of content and that is surrounding us, and not just in terms of where you are in relationship to an object, a restaurant, or someone else, but really, and especially in the time of the pandemic, It's about where you are in relationship to someone that you know, some other person. So the location information is the absolute great complement to effectively the data content itself. Because if you think about machine to machine and IoT, it's about remote sensing. It's about having devices that can talk through the internet and report what they are sensing or measuring. But as these devices are becoming more mobile, then you cannot assume anymore that they are where you left them. So that's where if you now can combine the sensing information with location, that's where the data truly become rich. That's where if you give this data to the decision makers, no matter which vertical industry, now they are empowered to make the right decision. And that vision is what we had back at that time in the early 2000s. It took us many years to kind of trying to build from many trials and error a technology that could scale throughout all the dimension of scalability. Because everyone can build a technology or a demonstration that runs in a lab, in an anechoic chamber, or in any kind of very nice and confined environment. When you start to go to real world and you start to have building with mezzanine, multiple floor, atrium, glass, metal everywhere, effectively, you know, GPS, if you think about, solves one problem. There is one word and they can position you on the earth. But when you walk inside a building, every single building is a planet on its own. And you will need to be able to have a technology that is reliable and robust to be able to accompany throughout all that journey.
People became very used to positioning and location, as well as the amount of error that's involved in providing that location with satellites. For instance, when you pull out your location, you pull up your map and you realize, hey, you know, okay, it's actually put me in the right town, but why is it showing me that I'm on one side of the street when I know fully well that I'm on the other side of the street? And so, you know, I think people, that's one of the challenges that when we go indoors, that the level of precision must be much greater than what for an indoor location. As an example, people require much more precision than just, you know, 10 feet across the street. And so one of the things that we have grown to work to fix is this, or to deliver on, is this promise of accuracy that is required whenever you're solving industrial problems. And one of the things that we've realized that the market is once bitten, twice shy, with a lot of other location technologies out there that are promising accuracy, yet failing to deliver an accurate position. And so that's one of the reasons why Coupa is now getting a fair amount of attention because of its ability to deliver this indoor position at a fairly high level of resolution.
You can't just get by on the bare minimum there, right? I mean, you're talking about life. You're talking about automated ground vehicles running into each other, running over people, getting the right materials. And so this is a story that I think that expresses what we're seeing with Industry 4.0.
Exactly. And it was, you know, one of the things that happens to us in the early days when we started to work on positioning technology for indoor is that we were meeting a lot of companies and a lot of people in the industry. I remember meeting with retail owners or logistic hub owners or managers. And typically we were sitting with them and we were telling the story, or we are building an indoor locationing system. We can give you location coordinates. And once we were giving them one or two use cases, no matter what the vertical market was, after that, the wheel was spinning in the other direction. Once they grasped the idea of what they could do with location, it was a flood from their side to say, so I can do this. Oh, I actually have this other problem as well. And that's where we kind of started to understand that the market has a thirst for a technology. There was a need that was definitely unanswered by the current technology. There were attempts, don't get me wrong. There has been also in the early 2000 technologies attempting to provide indoor location. But typically the problem was scalability. can you really scale? Just to give you some numbers, Chad, some of our current deployments, the largest one, we have like in a single factory, we are tracking 30,000 devices all at the same time. Every tool, every box that moves inside the factory is tracked. And there is a window, a screen that shows the position of all of these. And behind that, to your point of the digital twin having many layers, there are rules that are built on top of this digital image, which will trigger alert, alarms, and notification if some of these events that are pre-programmed in this digital world occurs. So there is really a lot of depth that can be built upon this.
You know, just to capitalize on one of the things Fabio was talking about, this technology, the practical use of it, you know, there are other very accurate technologies that are out there as an example, but many of them have very high power requirements. And because of the high power requirements, that means that the devices that you're tracking need to have a big battery. The bigger the battery, the higher the cost. And therefore, we find people trying to solve problems where they need to track thousands of things, but they will distill it down to hundreds of things because no one wants to practically go around and replace batteries on a factory floor. So as an example, you know, here we are with, this is one of the reasons why we embrace Bluetooth, because of its low power requirements. And so in that process, we're able to track thousands of items on the factory floor.
Yeah. Can you give me a kind of a visual of what that looks like? I would imagine you have some sort of tags. What is your, so actually there's multiple parts of this infrastructure, right? There is the way that you're tracking whatever each of those thousands of devices are. And then there's the way that you're actually tracking and receiving those radio signals. So what does that look like actually on the factory floor or wherever else it's deployed?
Sure. At a very fundamental level, we have tags, and this is an example of one form factor. They may be cards, badges, and you know, depending on whatever it is that we're trying to track and trace. There may be certain requirements of gathering other information along with the position, like maybe it's heart rate or temperature or, you know, what have you, other things that you're trying to sense. So these are in broadcast mode or in transmission mode, and they're affixed to the assets that are moving around dynamically.
It's about the size of a large coin, right? So it would be like a thick coin, and it's not a big, heavy pack. Like, you have a custom battery, or are you using like the little disc CR rated batteries, or what?
There are small batteries that are part of these, and again, it all depends on different form factors. There are some challenges that or some, you know, tags that are large because they don't want to lose them. They have to visually make eye contact. They make them bigger, you know, if you're attaching them to an airplane wing as an example or something like that. But in this case, you know, this is a very small one that I'm holding. And you're right, it's about the size of a half dollar, you know, two coins together, you know, the very small battery form factor. These are in transmit mode based on the low power, the way that it uses power. There's also usually an accelerometer that's associated with it so that it only transmits when it moves. That's when you need to find it, because if you know if an item's last known position is, then there's really no need for the tag to transmit. So in this case, when something moves, the accelerometer gets activated, it starts transmitting. And those are picked up by our locators, and I've got an example of one here. They look like wireless access points, about the size of a smoke detector. These are getting mounted in the ceiling, usually above the tracking area, and they are the ones that are receiving the packets. From there, they send those packets back into the positioning engine. The positioning engine calculates the coordinate, and then that sends it via an API to the applications that's making use of the data.
That's what your secret sauce is, right? So you guys came into this, or Fabio, you came into this with this idea that you could track the angle of arrival of a radio signal. That is the foundation of your secret sauce.
That's correct. So the analogy is very simple. If you think about yourself, Chad, standing in a room and having a laser pointer in your hand, if you point the laser light to the floor, what do you see is a dot. So a dot is 2D positioning, X and Y. And as you're moving the pen around, you see the dot moving around. which means that the XY coordinates of an object can be measured by knowing the angles, azimuth and elevation, of the node, the locator, the observation object. So the locator, if you like, is like a radio cameras. So a video camera could look and see where the object is in the visual domain and pinpoint. In the case of the locator, he can see the device in the radio space by measuring the direction of the signal, and upon that derive the position. So that's in a sense how the system works. The beauty for us is that when we developed the technology, we wanted to do it so that it was complementary to Bluetooth, so that we could leverage of, you know, operating an ISM band, having access to interoperable devices and many other things. But Coupa can operate in two modes, a proprietary mode and a complementary to Bluetooth mode. And so what happened is that we are not actually really using the Bluetooth stack. We use the hardware. And in that way, we can actually achieve that centimeter level accuracy that you were mentioning before. Because the tricky part is, how do you make out of a noisy radio environment, which has a lot of, you know, no line of sight and other problem in the radio propagation, actually derive a coherent information to pinpoint the location of the object? That's what took us 15 years to figure out.
We use radio signals for everything, and then multiply that or compound that by the problem of having metal surfaces, reflective surfaces, surfaces that scatter the energy. Like, I don't even know how you actually solve that problem. And obviously that's what you've spent 15 years doing. So that's pretty incredible. And let's actually talk about some of the numbers here, because to put this into perspective, so like you said, it's very accurate. There are other accurate technologies. They're not as cost effective, and or they don't have the ability to track in real time. And so the real time part is what's interesting to me, because based on our last conversation, you were saying you can get down to 10 centimeters of accuracy with 150 milliseconds of latency. So tell me what that looks like when you're tracking a hockey puck that's screaming across the ice.
What it looks like is that you could run really augmented reality on top of your video. So we have partners that they've done the video overlay when you actually can see the puck moving on the ice and the kind of shadow or halo underneath the puck as it moves around. And, you know, this kind of combination doesn't forgive you. If suddenly you have a jump or you have a latency, you're going to see it. So a lot of the work that has been done in the Coupa system is really to be able to mitigate all the radio noise. And you're right, there are other technology in the market. For instance, there is ultra-wideband, that is another technology that can measure very accurately the position of object. And the way in which that technology solves the problem is set in time, because they have a large bandwidth, so the name ultra-wideband. So the bandwidth is very large and their resolution in time is very accurate. That's how they can measure the direct line of sight or the specular components. In case of our technology, we have solved the problem in space. So we are at, it's just another domain. It's like in the Fourier transform when you go for time and frequency, but it's the same thing. It's just looking at it in a different way. That's what we do in our case. We solve the problem in space, but we arrive at the same solution that we are able to mitigate practically the multipath component and still look at where the object that is broadcasting is. And that's how our customers are very happily using our technology in industrial manufacturing, in car production line, in airplane hangar, places where there is a lot of metal, trust me. And when you look at the data, the raw data, you get overwhelmed. It's like, oh my gosh, I could never get anything out of that. But it's the signal processing and it's the algorithm that goes behind, and the knowledge on how the system is planned and deployed that actually makes all of that simplified. And what took us many years, Chad, was not just to figure out the math and the algorithm, but is to simplify everything to the level that we can give it in the hand of someone that doesn't have a PhD in radio engineering, and he can carry out a deployment by himself in the other side of the world without me or another one of my colleagues having to go in place. That's what we call scalability. And I mean we have more than 2,000 deployments on the floor as we speak. And trust me, I haven't visited all of them. So we spend a ton of time really building comprehensible tools that can be used and consumed by anybody that has an interest to use a position in technology. And this work is always ongoing. And next year, we are actually releasing our new generation of software that is even simpler to be used than what we have today.
I have to give a shout out, first of all, to the fact that you mentioned a Fourier transform. So I would imagine that your hardware probably remains relatively stable over time, but you're talking about the software getting better, understanding how to filter out noise. I would imagine there's an AI component to that. You mentioned a bunch of different use cases. You mentioned an automotive, you mentioned tool tracking. And so I'm thinking, like, what's actually going on in the industrial world that you would actually find these trackers on? Tools, materials, that kind of thing.
So I've got a good example of one, and I like to talk about it because it's a complex environment, like we were just talking about. There's a lot of metal in a lot of these industrial environments, and there's getting the technology to work, you know, with in a steel coil manufacturer as an example, who the coil, you know, is, and without getting down the road on metallurgy, there's shelf life to these things. There's a time life or a half life that they all have. They have to be put into production as a raw material, and so they also need to be located quickly. And they come in different gauges. They all look similar to the eye, and so there's a real problem because you can't necessarily look at one coil from another coil and say, well, that's going to this customer and that's going to that customer. Yes, there are barcoding, routines and RFID, passive RFID scanning that could go on, but it's a labor intensive solution. It requires somebody to walk around and find it. So here's a problem where this one company was not able to find the items that they produced. They would get stacked up. They would have man hours upon man hours, literally searching for items for a day. And they were now able to reduce this down to 5 minutes. Now, think about the time and motion involved in doing that, multiplied times hundreds of coils that you're trying to prepare for shipment. And there's a whole cascading level of efficiencies that get added to that process. So if you think about the trucks that wait in the parking lot, the customer satisfaction because they're not getting their products on time. All of these examples, you know, are compounding problems. And one of the benefits that they realized after they put in this solution, they said, okay, we can operate much more efficiently. But what they weren't counting on is that they were also going to be shipping more product on a daily basis. So they were able to increase their production, their output, you know, by 30% in some cases, on a 30% more per day. And that's just for shipping, just because they can't find stuff.
This is a common story that we hear. Manufacturing companies, industrial companies especially, are somewhat behind the times. You have a complex organization that's been built up over time, and you have old systems in place, and they work, but there's a lot of efficiencies to be had.
What do you do next after you put this technology in? And so, okay, you put it in to solve one particular problem, but then there's so many other things to solve for. Collision avoidance, worker safety, being able to find other processes on top of this. So once items enter a certain zone, then you can launch workflows that to summon certain skilled workers and tools, as an example. And we find that in aerospace, where once an aircraft is ready to be taken to the next level of production, that requires a different echelon of people who do that work. As well as subcontractors and so forth. And being able to track and find them and get that work done in a timely fashion is all impacted by being able to find things and track people. In other examples, I'm sure we're all exhausted to talk about COVID, but worker safety and doing social distancing and contact tracing is also a function of RTLS. And our technology you know, lends itself very well to that, in that A, we can document, you know, the distance two people are in proximity to one another, in relation to one another. But additionally, also being able to trace who they've talked to historically and provide that information. So it's not just the social distancing and being able to give them a notification or a haptic alert if they're in close proximity to one another, but also doing the tracing. And we knew fully well that we have partners that have put this technology in because they had to get their workers back on the factory floor safely. But immediately the customers started to realize, as Fabio discussed at the beginning, well, wow, if I can track location, there's other things that I need to locate as well. Maybe I need to locate my assets, and there's all these other applications. And so from the system integrator perspective, this technology is sort of the gift that keeps giving.
The phrase that comes to mind is compound ROI, or multiples of ROI, right? Because you're going to have that initial payoff. And in the case of the metal rolls, the being able to find their materials, I think you said last time we spoke that they achieved break even in a matter of months. And that's incredible for a technology that, as you said, keeps on giving. And so I'm curious, what does that conversation look like? And then what do you tend to see a couple months down the road after these deployments?
Initially, and this is an IoT problem, everybody comes to you with one ROI that they're trying to solve, and they tend to silo their solutions to solve each one of these ROI problems. You know, and each one's got its own, its own set of challenges and costs that are associated with it. So they bring out one technology to solve one problem, another technology to solve another, and so on and so forth. So usually it comes to us with the first problem. Here's what we're trying to solve. Here's what we need to track and trace. We need to do it in real time. The items are dynamic. They move around a lot. How can we solve this? So we obviously go through and explain how our technology works. And then they usually adopt the kit. They try it out. They test it. They usually come back successfully, and then they, you know, have a litany of other questions that we will support them on. And then they put the technology in. We encourage all of our partners to try to approach this from a multifaceted business approach, that you are here to solve multiple problems, and don't just stop there. And the ability to solve not just social distancing, because we warn everybody, listen, to put this in for contact tracing, you know, this is a problem that hopefully is going to go away very soon. There's all these other, all these other solutions that you can provide with RTLS.
Is this a modular system in the sense that, let's say you had, so somebody I interviewed recently was one of your customers, actually, which is Rokla AGV, automated forklifts, automated ground vehicles. And so they've obviously got an extreme need for accurate real-time tracking indoors. Now, let's say an integration partner goes in and puts a Rokla system in, and as part of that deployment, there's a Coupa system in there. Is that something that the distribution center, the factory, whoever is the end recipient of that, can then build on top of that and access that? Or do they have to go through Rokla? Is it somehow tied up in that package?
The ability of our system to be able to send the data to a variety of different endpoints is a benefit of this. So there may be a couple of different systems that are making use of this data. It doesn't necessarily have to go into one. But in the case of, we have some customers that were using AGVs, they used a variety of other technologies that the AGVs use. They use LIDAR to sense their proximity to other elements on the floor. The problem is that a lot of warehouses look the same, and occasionally their computer programs being what they are, these AGVs get lost. And so they would have to go back to a point of origin to sort of reorient themselves to where they are in the space. All the work stops. And so it's very disruptive. So we had a partner at one point who used us to provide the feedback. If it ever forgets, they can be reminded of where they are on the floor. Other examples of worker safety in these environments are if you're tagging the workers as well as the AGV, you can send it and communicate to it circuitous routes in an effort to avoid gaggles of people. I think that's the technical term, gaggle.
Fabio, I know you're going to have to drop off soon, so I want to come back to you, and I want to touch a little bit more on the technology before we start to wrap up. And so you mentioned that you're coming out with a new release of your product, a new revision. We were talking about AI, and so can you tell me a little bit about that? How do you even improve on something like this? It seems like once you have an ability to get a location in real time, what else do you do?
Well, it's similar to us to Ford that invented the first car. How can you improve on that once you have four wheels and an engine? So there is actually a ton of improvement that we have in the roadmap. And so the first big thing we're going to launch next year is going to be a cloud offer. And this cloud offer is going to help with scalability of the system. And scalability in this case means to tackle a lot of the different small things that makes a system scalable or not. I give you an example. If you have 30,000 tags to provision inside the factory, you don't want to do that one by one by pressing a button. There is a much better way to do it. Or if you need to monitor and maintain, let's say, 300 stores spread around entire North America, you can't just have someone calling the people and saying, is everything okay? So there needs to be a full telemetry monitoring in place with like fault recovery. And so higher availability is always important for the system. And also the platform itself, and that's where AI comes into place, it needs to be able to auto-adjust over time, maybe correct certain errors, maybe understand how the environment is changing and be able to readapt itself to that. So all of these are a little thing that when they sum up, they make it a big deal for really be able to provide a technology to a customer that is reliable, is robust, and once they put it in place, they can rely upon that to run even mission critical services. Because when you do collision avoidance, as an example in an industrial site, you really want to rely that technology is precise. Or where you do access control, you want that door opens if someone is in front of it. So there is very little room for errors in that case. So we are also improving a lot on the hardware side. We have a new generation of product hitting the market next year with our outdoor proposition. We have the indoor version called Q17 that came to market this year. And that device, for instance, has two radios, not one. So the older generation with one radio was already able to do a lot of different and exciting things, enabling different architecture and use cases. You know, the gift that keeps on giving, it's because the system can operate in different modality at the same time. But then now with this new generation hardware and having two radios on board, we are opening a door to a completely new arena of opportunity on how we do communication with the different IoT device on the floor, forward and backward communication, firmware upgrade, remote monitoring, maybe even reducing the infrastructure cost. Because in some environment, you know, some of the partner might not want to immediately put in place something that is very heavy cost-wise. And running cable can be expensive. So we are putting together we call it Coupa Toolkit for reducing the infrastructure cost, which is a set of different sub-tools that can be leveraged and used in different combination by system integrator to find the optimal balance between what they need to achieve and what their budget is. And this goes in the line of cable aggregation, wireless communication. We are working on integrating into 5G networks for bridging the wireless communication, also using native Bluetooth, possibly Wi-Fi. So we are really getting creative on this end, and our partner help us a lot because we have a lot of communication with them, and typically they are the one that push us sometimes more gently, sometimes more promptly in certain direction, and make us really understand what is their pain point and we are more than happy to try to find the best way to solve those.
Speaking of modular, right, that's a black box that keeps getting more and more valuable that it sounds like you can also piece into what you need as you discover how it can be used in your environment. So I know you have to drop off and head to your conference, but Fabio, thank you so much. I'm going to continue the conversation with Tom. Is there anything else you want to leave our listeners with who may be considering location technology or maybe potential partners?
I would, but first of all, thank you, Chad, for having me here. This was a great opportunity and a great discussion. And I would like everybody that is interested to know more about our product or what we can offer to them to just don't hesitate to reach out and surely we can have a conversation. We have a lot to share being on the market for 10 years and having 15 years of experience in location technology. Happy to share all the pitfalls we had so that we can together gain success in a faster pace.
All right. Thank you so much, Fabio. And we'll get that contact information from Tom. So if somebody is considering adopting real-time technology in their facility, maybe they're a shop floor engineer, maybe they're an executive, whoever it may be, maybe it's a partner. And they're probably going to have some sort of understanding of most of the common technologies that are out there. But where does that decision-making process start in earnest?
It's a great question, Chad. One of the places where RTLS frequently gets, you know, tossed into the same bucket with, RFID, and it's sort of an extension of that because if you think of it, what the acronym stands for, RFID stands for radio frequency identification, and this is taking it to the next level. It's providing not just identification, but it's also giving position information. And so it's kind of there are overlapping similarities, but a lot of people quickly say, "Oh, well, that's RFID, and we know what that is,
and we already have that, or we've already looked at that, and it wasn't going to work," and they may not know necessarily why it wasn't going to work.
And again, that's one of the challenges too. The other thing it's important to talk about is that there's a lot of other, RTLS has been around for a while, and proximity is usually what the history of that has been, just to kind of go down this path for a minute. And so there's this preconceived notion that the marketplace has that location really means 3 meters, 5 meters accuracy, room level accuracy. Is it there? And in certain cases, that's good enough. But in many industrial environments, and usually where we get involved is where people are trying to solve the problem and saying, I need something a little bit more precise than that. And the challenge has been in this marketplace that the businesses have looked at Bluetooth solutions as an example, that are not using angle of arrival, that are measuring the signal strength of radio frequency waves and using that to deterministically or not deterministically provide the position. So, for reasons that Fabio could explain to you, you guys could have a whole other podcast about that. But, in short, when I talk about people being once bitten, twice shy, that's usually the first thing that we have to overcome because they're like, well, okay, we know what RTLS is and we know what it's capable of and we know how that works. And usually, in words like gateways and beaconing, are tossed around frequently in the same vernacular as where we are. And of course, we're here to explain that we're different. So we use a completely different nomenclature. We talk about tags and locators, just to make sure that people understand this is not your father's RTLS, if you will. In that case, that's usually one of the obstacles that we see, overcoming. There was an interesting story. You asked about who makes these decisions. There's usually when you use the word IoT, that immediately throws you into the IT department where they're looking at data analytics and they're approaching the problem from this perspective. And there's a tremendous amount of research that goes into it, but we find in the industrial environment, the people who have operational considerations and control are the ones who really need, the solutions. And so I had one end customer explain, he said, oh God, no, don't call it IoT. I'm just trying to solve a problem here. I've got a business to operate and I'm, he's an industrial engineer. He's like, I'm trying to improve the way that we work. And so I try to use language like that surrounding the business problem and not necessarily, you know, call it IoT because that brings in a whole other department. And so that was sort of an interesting approach where this is technology that it's solving an end user's problem. But yet the, you know, so the end customer versus the buyer may be very different.
That makes sense though, doesn't it? If you think about it, the people who are most affected by the physical outcomes of how an operation is going from every perspective, right? That's safety. That's the efficiency of moving materials around. That's how fast can you produce items on a line? I mean, like I can imagine anybody down there who is not just looking at it from a spreadsheet, you know, up at the top office, but they're actually dealing with the consequences of, okay, I almost got run over by a forklift, or I can't find my rolls of steel, right?
Interestingly enough, yes, but yet we find ourselves thrown down this path of architecture. And whenever, and sometimes engineers of any, whether it's an industrial engineer or whether it's somebody in IT, you know, they immediately go to architecture. And so if you start talking about electronic devices that get mounted in the ceiling that look like wireless access points that require cabling and switches and routers, then you call the IT department. So the IT department goes out and talks to, you know, the usual suspects, Cisco, Aruba, you name it. And you know, there are Wi-Fi solutions that provide RTLS as well. His solutions aren't as accurate. And so, you know, but their salespeople are telling the IT people who are not location experts, hey, you know, we can solve that problem too with our infrastructure. And so that's often one of the challenges that we find in this business where, you know, there are competing factions that are approaching the business and, you know, at a different level. And of course, the IT guy comes into the meeting and he says, hey, you know, I can solve that problem. And, you know, and therefore the challenge begins, right? So the conversation begins, you know, comparing and contrasting.
As usual, it's a matter of educating your customers, educating your partners to educate their customers. And people tend to make the right decisions once they have the right information. But so often it's about shifting their beliefs and breaking down those barriers that just either aren't true or based on obsolete ways of thinking or problems that just weren't solved until the last decade.
That is the good fight that we endeavor to battle.
What would you leave our listeners with who are considering location, real-time location technology, maybe had some beliefs that were changed by this conversation? What is the key takeaway there?
Accuracy, scalability, and flexibility in terms of using, tracking a variety of tags and tag types. It doesn't all have to be proprietary. It can be open. And so an accuracy can be delivered now with RTLS, with Bluetooth, that in an era that has previously believed that it cannot.
So the lesson there is if you've got challenges around location or you see opportunities to improve your operations based on something like this, that it is in fact possible. It's being done with hundreds of partners, customers, integrators. I would imagine that you guys probably aren't the only ones, but it sounds like you've been at it for, as you said, the oldest and the youngest location company. So what is the best way to contact Coupa?
Certainly by visiting our website, and you can fill out a form, and that's responded to usually within less than a day from somebody around the world. That's the first way to find us. You know, that's www.coupa.com. And then there's a litany of places to click through and asking for information and to be contacted by a sales organization.
Thank you so much. It's been really fascinating.
Thank you, Chad. It was a pleasure.